How do we ever know what animals are thinking? For that matter, have you ever noticed how often we compare animal intelligence to our own? I mean, there's a whole cottage industry of lab studies suggesting that chimps have the learning ability of a 2.5-year-old human child. There's Rico, the border collie in Germany, who can recognize 200 different words. There's an African gray parrot named Alex, who could say 100 words. But, you know, maybe human intelligence is the wrong yardstick. Primatologist Franz de Waal told Steve Paulson he thinks it's pointless to try to rank who's smarter and who's dumber in the animal world. The title of his latest book says it all. Are we smart enough to know how smart animals are?
We have this scale in our mind of higher animals and lower animals, and of course we are at the top of that scale, and we have been comparing us with other species. And I personally must say that the question whether you are smarter than an octopus, yes or no, is really not an interesting question, because in some ways, of course, you are much smarter than an octopus. In other ways, the octopus can do things that you certainly cannot do. You can change color in response to its environment. That's a cognitive feat right there. And so lots of animals do things that are quite complex.
So you're saying that animals, other animals, I mean, other than human beings, have very different kinds of intelligence than we do.
Yeah, so if we compare with chimpanzees, we are comparing at sort of the same level, because a chimp has manual hands and has binocular vision. And so a chimp is very similar to us. But how are you going to compare yourself as an elephant, I don't know, or a bat or an octopus or a dolphin? These live in very different environments, perceive things very differently from you. And so their cognition is also very different.
Well, there's a fascinating history here of how scientists have tried to draw the line between humans and other animals. I mean, what is it that only humans do? And at one time, it was thought to be tool use. There was also the idea that it was self-awareness. Or later on, the idea that we were the only species that could pass down our culture to later generations. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that various animal species can do all of those things.
Yeah, there's really not much of a claim that has held up. So we have come up over the last 50 years with maybe 25 different claims. Theory of mind is another one. And none of this has held up. And that's why in the book I ask people to stop doing this. Stop making these outrageous claims of we are the only ones who can do this. Why would we want to focus on these differences that turn out to be illusory?
Well, I think the reason people do want to focus on these differences, I mean, other than a certain amount of, I don't know, hubris about what it means to be human, mm-hmm. is that we have put our imprint on this world like no other animal. We have a certain level of sophistication in our culture that no other animal has, right?
Yeah, that depends on how you look at it. If you mean like we fly in airplanes and we have the iPhone, yes, that's very special. That's a sort of accumulation of human knowledge that has happened in the last couple of hundred years. And so it's not a single individual human who has invented the iPhone. The iPhone is an invention of the human species through its scientific communications, basically.
So you're saying the mistake is if we try to look at the human brain and compare it to the brain of any other species, we're not fundamentally different than other species.
Well, the brain issue is sort of interesting. It got exciting when at some point neuroscientists proposed that we should not look at brain size and we should not look at body size. We should just look at the number of neurons that's in the brain to determine how intelligent the species is. And all of this was fine because at that point, humans had the most neurons of anyone. And so this held up fine until 2 years ago, I believe, it was determined that the elephant has actually 3 times more neurons than the human. And at that point, everyone got very upset and said, well, how is that possible? These neurons are probably sitting in the wrong place at the elephant or whatever. So they came up with alternative explanations. But this is what happens all the time, and I got sort of tired of it because many animals do wonderful things with their intelligence in their particular environment.
Well, let's talk about culture, because for so long it seemed that, okay, culture was the one thing that humans had that no other animal species have. But even if we're just talking about chimpanzees, I mean, there are certain cultural traits or cultural knowledge that's passed down among certain groups of chimps that other groups don't have, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so the concept of animal culture came from a Japanese scientist, and I don't think it is accidental. It came from Kenji Imanishi. Because in the West, the anthropologists had defined culture as human. So they said, culture is what makes us human. Now, within that framework, there's no room for animal culture, for sure. So it was not an accident, I think, that a Japanese scientist was the one who said, well, if animals can learn from each other, they learn habits and knowledge from each other, and as a result, they produce different groups of the same species that act differently, we should call that culture in animals.
Well, let's give some examples here. For instance, there are these Japanese macaques that wash potatoes.
Yeah, so that was discovered in the 50s, is that the scientists were handing out sweet potatoes to macaques and they would take them to the ocean to wash them. And it was a young female who started it, and from her it spread to all sorts of other individuals. But now we have, in chimpanzees, at least 50 or 60 behaviors that vary across Africa. So you can show to a primatologist a little video of chimpanzees, let's say, eating nuts or whatever they're eating, and he can, on the basis of behavior alone, tell you where that video was taken.
So, for instance, certain chimpanzees in West Africa smash nuts with rocks, but you never see that behavior in East Africa.
Yeah, so that's a specialization in that area, and we, who knows how it got started. It has been going on for thousands of years. They recently excavated a site where chimpanzees have been cracking nuts for 4,000 years. And so they have said chimpanzees have entered the Stone Age. That's how they call it.
And then there are chimps in the Congo, I know, maybe other places as well, that use different kinds of sticks to basically get army ants out of their nests. I mean, there's the big stick and the little stick.
Yeah, so the chimps use toolkits. And I'm very interested in that because it relates to planning. So if they're, for example, going to raid a beehive, they have a stick to perforate the beehive and another stick to scoop up the honey. They usually have three or four different sticks. And they need to do all of this quite quickly because the bees, of course, get angry and they have to get out of the way at some point. And so they come to their task with a whole bunch of tools, the way you would come with a screwdriver and a hammer or whatever. And the planning capacities of apes, because that takes some planning to do that, is a topic of intense study at the moment. So we tend to think of animals that they live in the present. Animals don't have a future and don't have a past, so to speak. But we now do all these studies where we have animals, we give them, for example, in experimental settings, we give them tools that they cannot use until a couple of hours later and see if they hold on to the tools.
Oh, and also, aren't there cases where chimpanzees, maybe other species as well, will hide certain bits of food so that their friend, across the prairie or whatever doesn't see it, you know, but then they'll come back and get it. I mean, there's a whole deception factor going on here.
Well, the deception is, of course, anyone who at a zoo who works with orangutans know that, for example, orangutans can dismantle the whole cage without you knowing. So they unscrew every screw, they put it in their mouth or they put it in a hiding place, and so the caretaker has no clue what's going on until, of course, the whole thing is taken apart. I heard such an interesting story out of a Swiss zoo where the orangutans had a skylight in their cage and they had dismantled the whole thing. And on summer nights, they would spend on top of the roof of their building. And then in the morning before the caretakers come, they would go back into their cage and put that skylight precisely back so that no one ever noticed. So they may have been doing it for years, they said, before they noticed what was going on.
So it wasn't just a matter of just wanting to escape, get out. They came back in and put the skylight back in.
Yeah, no, it was not an escape thing. It was more like on a nice summer night, it's better to be on the roof than inside, of course.
Yeah. But I mean, it also raises a fascinating question about when you get to the animal species that are so unlike humans, like dolphins, let's say, you know, that live in an entirely different kind of environment. How do we begin to try to understand their cognitive abilities?
Well, dolphins have very complex vocalizations. So one of the things with dolphins is they have called signature whistles. So each individual has its own melody, a bit like the ringtone of a telephone. Each one has a different ringtone. And they recognize each other by these sounds, but they can also, and that's really interesting, they can call each other by the sound. So you can call me by using my sound, you imitate my sound, and you're directed at me, and I know that my name is being called.
You're talking about being directed to an individual dolphin, not just a whole group of dolphins.
Yeah, to an individual. And so The dolphin experts talk about names. They say it's not just a signature whistle. They use it as a name that they can call someone by. And they use their signature whistles as names for each other.
Wow. Just because dolphins are so, I mean, yes, they're mammals, but they live in an entirely different kind of environment. I mean, an aquatic environment. Will we ever really understand how dolphins think?
I think with dolphins, we will get closer than, with, let's say, with fish. Fish live in that same environment, and octopus live in that same environment. And we have much less of a connection because everything that mammals do, like mammals have cooperation going, have empathy going, have mother-child bond. And so in many ways, mammals are the animals we can relate to the easiest. But try to relate to fish behavior or try to relate to octopus behavior, that's all very challenging.
And the octopus in particular, which we know is highly intelligent and has most of its neurons actually in its tentacles, right? Not in its brain.
Yeah, so the octopus has more like an intranet instead of a centralized nervous system. And so it's all spread out and distributed. How can we ever relate to that? Is that I don't know how the octopus perceives things, but we know that their little brains are sort of mini brains that are sitting there. And we have no way of knowing how complex that kind of cognition is at this point.
Now, it would seem that maybe if there is one attribute that humans have that, for the most part, other animals don't have, it's language. Would you agree with that?
Well, that's the one exception I make in my book is that language is the one capacity where I say, well, that's probably a human specialization that is really something that we have.
But then it raises this fascinating question about for those animals that basically don't have language or just a very rudimentary form of language, what does it mean to think without language?
I'm not sure we use language to think. This was at some point very popular. But of course, Piaget, who studied young children, he already objected to it. He felt young children think, but they don't have language yet. And so we now don't believe that language is the stuff of thought. We are now at a stage where we look at the specific ecology of the species to understand what kind of cognition does it have. So, for example, there are wasps that recognize each other by their face. It's very remarkable.
Really?
Because face
recognition. Individual wasps.
Yeah, so face recognition used to be considered uniquely human. That's completely abandoned as a position. But then the wasps came, and they found one kind of paper wasp that lives in small colonies where the individuals have a hierarchy, and so it helps them to recognize each other. And they have different patches, yellow and black patches in the face, and they recognize each other's faces. And there's a very closely related wasp that doesn't live in that kind of tight, small family units, and they don't recognize each other, and they cannot recognize each other by their face. And so cognition is very much dependent on your ecology and your natural history, and that's something that the behaviorists completely overlooked because they try to equalize all cognition across the board.
Frans de Waal is the director of the Living Links Center at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center. He talked with Steve Paulson about his book, Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are?